Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the KYW Weekly Dive, where we take a closer look at a story we're telling here on KYW News Radio. I'm Carol McKenzie. Today, terrifying explosions at a South Philly oil refinery and a dark day for more than 1,000 Philly workers who are suddenly looking for jobs.
We're hearing reports of an explosion in an oil refinery in southwest Philadelphia.
Seeing on social media people as far away as Camden County, New Jersey, saying that their houses shook.
120 firefighters rushed to the scene.
They heard a loud bang and saw large flames.
Somebody was out back, ran inside the refinery's on fire.
The whole sky lit up yellow. That's when I seen the explosion, and then I seen the second explosion.
Explosion, boom, fire. Explosion, boom, fire. Bigger and bigger each time.
Still seeing giant plumes of black smoke.
I heard the shock wave, the sound wave. Oh, crap.
And as we were standing there, something else blew up.
It was so, like, powerful that it literally shot. I saw a whole tank go up.
Until Philadelphia Energy Solutions can get to the valve to shut off the butane and propane.
The blast from the third one was the biggest blast, and that's the one that really shook everything.
The fire is not under control, but the fire is confined and contained.
Joining me today, Terrence Ford and Ryan O'Callaghan, both from the Philadelphia Energy Solutions plant. Terrence, what do you do there?
I am a refinery operator, primarily at Schuylkill River Tank Farm. Was actually in training for a lead operator position.
And Ryan, what do you do at the plant?
I'm also a refinery operator.
And also the head of the union.
Yes, president of the union.
Terrence, let's start with you. You were there the night of the explosion, correct?
Yes, I was.
What happened?
Well, I was working at the gasoline blender that night, and outside the window, I saw an orange light. Immediately, you know, it's one of those things where you know something bad's just happened. Go outside, and I see that a fire has started, and immediately I start checking to see whether it's where directly where I am, or if it's, you know, further away to see what needs to be done for emergency response. Once I saw, I ran back inside and the radio announcement goes off that the 433 unit had the fire. I essentially had to start cutting off the fuel that was coming my way so they could be blocked in to make sure that once they closed on their side, nothing would flow back to them to feed the fire, and then make sure that the propane area was situated and make sure that the security knew not to let in any more propane truck drivers because you want to try to condense and make sure you know who's where and make sure that you can get everyone in a secure location. I guess then the first thought is, because I know the people on the unit, are they okay?
So then what happens? That had to have been a chaotic scene.
Chaotic. It's difficult to deal with a situation like that, but we have been trained. It's part of our training to deal with fires in the refinery. A lot of the situations, it's not, what do I do next? It's just autopilot. You hit switches, hit valves, close things, call the emergency response numbers, get the fire department on standby or get everyone moving. It's reflex after a while.
You have your own fire department inside the plant. Is that always staffed?
Yes.
So you had the training, but then you just said, of course, what you're thinking is everybody okay? Is that a battle to go into the kind of the reflex while trying to not be overwhelmed by the kind of the fear that somebody you know may have been hurt?
Once something happens, there's the human element because you know some of these people. Their kids play together. You talk about sports. it automatically goes into, I hope they're not hurt, but let me get what I need done to make sure that if they're not, they don't get hurt.
So then what happens next? You see the fireball, you hit all the alarms, then what?
Incident command is set up by the fire department and they start giving out instructions for what they need everyone to do. Everyone in, who has or would have anything to deal with the fire, they let you know what they need done.
So then the video and the eyewitness accounts from that morning were pretty incredible. There are fireballs in the sky. What was that like being on the inside when, you know, it caught fire and then there were explosions happening?
People have watched movies and you always, you know, the wow factor goes into that. If it's, you know, a situation, obviously, with your first time, it's in most situations, I think people could freeze. But when you walk in the door, you have a 3-year training program. So you are being prepared for if there is an incident. And then the longer you're there, you have annual trainings, you have monthly checks, you have all kinds of safety audits, and we're constantly prepping for situations, for incidents. While your eyes may get big, but you automatically know what you need to be doing.
What was it like when those explosions, the fire, you know, the fire was going on, then those explosions started happening because people on the outside of the plant heard them and saw them. What was it like being on the inside when that was happening?
To be very honest, it's almost like one of those things. Once you start moving and knowing what you need to do to try to prevent damage or injuries, you don't really hear it. I mean, it's almost like you, I don't want to say blank out, but you're almost in, almost like a robot. Where, you know, I need to do this, I need to do this, I have to make sure this is done, I have to check on this. And you don't even hear it. You know that you need to be careful, you need, you know that you need to stay present so that if there's a radio communication or a phone call or something and they need you to do something else, that you're responsive. But it's not like you're listening for that anymore, looking for that, because you know that you need to be doing something.
What happened? Do you know what caused this fire or what burned?
Well, they're still doing the investigations to determine that. So I wouldn't want to speculate.
You guys work with some pretty nasty chemicals. And there was a lot of talk about the hydrogen fluoride tank that was close by. Could you describe or explain why that was a concern and what you did to contain that tank?
There's somewhat of a misconception as far as how that goes about. The unit is a hydrofluoric unit, but it is a modified unit. There are special chemicals, additives that are added in for the unit. I believe it's one of 4 in the country, if I'm not mistaken, that actually use this process, that if there is any kind of leak, instead of it going into the atmosphere, it's automatically set to go towards the ground so that it can be easily contained and have less damage to, hopefully no damage for the environment.
This, can you talk about this chemical? It's extremely dangerous, isn't it?
Well, hydrofluoric acid.
Yes.
Can it be nasty? Yes. But we do everything that we can humanly through safety checks, both hourly and salary, both.
Yeah. So our international years ago did a survey of all the refineries that are represented by the USW. And they came back with some recommendations for the refineries. So out of, I guess, the 50 refineries that use HF acid, 4 complied with some of those recommendations. So like Terrence was speaking to, a chemical is added to the HF so it falls to the ground. The water cannons that were turned on, fire monitors that were turned on, were part of that survey. and the recommendations. The tank being away from the general area was part of those recommendations. The safety shutdown system was part of those recommendations. So Sunoco, who formerly owned the refinery, put those safety aspects into it. So it's a modified HF unit. It's not as so much as where you hear HF unit, if it leaks, it'll vaporize, hover to ground, then escape the refinery's premises.
Mm-hmm.
This kind, because it's modified, will fall to the ground in a gel-like substance, and then the water cannons will keep it to the unit itself, and that's what happened.
When did you get on scene?
I got there at about 4:45. So I got a notice. I get the alert when there's an incident in the refinery via text, and then our chairperson of our safety committee called me. He was going in to fight the fire.
What did you think when you got that text, that notification?
It was a concern. You know, it's a concern anytime I get a text. I'll get the text if somebody twists their ankle. So it was a concern. And then when I got in at 4:45, you know, I was concerned as well. But I was just there to monitor, as the co-sponsor of the safety committee, what was going on.
What did you see when you got there? What was going on?
If you didn't know, you would think it was chaos, but it was orchestrated chaos. The Philadelphia Fire Department was there. They had set up their command with the PES command person, and they were directing people how to fight the fire, and they were fighting the fire. So all the training that the PES Fire Brigade does with the city of Philadelphia worked, came to fruition.
This facility is really old. I believe it was built in 1866.
Yeah, well, the site's been an industrial complex since 1866, but it's constantly under upkeep and maintenance. So, you know, you could say Independence Hall has been there since 1776, but obviously...
We don't have chemicals
yes,
in like this in Independence
that's
Hall.
True, but it's yeah. constantly upkeep. You know, that's where building trades members worked 8 million man hours since in 7 years. So they're constantly refurbishing the pipes and the infrastructure in the refinery.
There was some talk about, you know, PES, the financial problems, and just not having the money to do the proper maintenance. Is that a correct assessment? And are you confident that, in fact, the facility has been properly maintained?
We always want more maintenance and more technology put into it. But I have verified with some of our safety people, the union side of the safety, that all the compliance issues during the turnarounds were met. All the things they were required to do, they did.
Were anybody hurt?
There were five minor injuries, but it was to the response of the fire, not because of the fire. They were either driving through the area or going to the, you know, fire. Mm-hmm. Bumps and scrapes and a twisted ankle.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The people who live in that area, there have been protests after the fire. People are really concerned, and it's frightening to see these huge fireballs bursting into the air from your bedroom window or feel the blast. What is your response to people who are scared and think the refinery is dangerous?
There's no question their voice needs to be heard. There's no question that it can be frightening from what they've seen. However, we're residents as well, the workers who work in a refinery. I live 6 miles away. I grew up down the street from the refinery. We would not work there if it was unsafe. If we were breathing in toxic chemicals, we'd be dead. We've had members work there 40 years. It's not odd to have somebody with seniority going back to the Vietnam War. So they would be dead if they were inhaling toxic chemicals every day. And we have people go into retirement and live a long life in retirement. So yeah, their concerns are valid. But, you know, like everyone, people need to listen. So we wouldn't work there if it was unsafe.
I mean, because one of the complaints we heard is people who have respiratory problems, asthma, that they claim that those conditions are worsened by living near the refinery because of the pollutants?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, if there's a direct analysis on what caused their asthma or whatnot, I feel bad that they have asthma or any kind of health concern. But like I said, we would have asthma, you know, because we're right there in the refinery, right next to the stack. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell them there.
Are there air quality tests that are done regularly in and around the refinery?
There are actually all around the fence lines of the refinery air quality monitors, which are get to the grain of sand standards for anything that goes into the atmosphere. And the city actually gets the reports for that. So if there was an issue, we would have known about it a long time ago, and they probably would have come at us for that. But even with the fire that happened most recently, there were virtually no issues.
People were skeptical about that. People were skeptical that they were, I guess, getting the truth, that the readings were accurate or the readings were being reported accurately.
You know, our USW is pretty in tune with safety. You know, we have six full-time safety people that, you know, the union appoints. So, yeah, we're on them for safety as well. But I don't think the fire department would have their people in there if they felt it was unsafe and they were breathing toxic chemicals.
And as far as an operations standpoint, we have the right to refuse to do a job. We have a right to shut down jobs if any aspect of it is deemed unsafe, or if there's a question about possible safety, then the hourly person gets with management, gets with safety. We all work together to make sure it's being done properly and safely.
Have you ever had an instance where the air quality was bad that you had to shut something down and you had to bring that complaint to the company?
No, I haven't. And I'm not aware of anything.
And you've been there how long?
13 years.
So now there's talk about what's next. PES wants to get rid of this plant. So do you know, can you give us the latest? What's happening with that?
Well, obviously PES is shutting down, but there's rumors of potential bidders to run the refinery as a refinery. So we need to push the politicians, to push the banks that own PES to sell it. PES started, they got it virtually for nothing from Sunoco. So they should turn it over for nothing to whoever wants to run it as a refinery.
Do you have any names of companies?
Nah, I couldn't speculate on that. I just heard rumors that there were bids put in. Hopefully, those people who put bids in come public.
What is the time frame? How is the plant operating today? And, you know, what's the time frame here is for the shutdown?
Well, they're still running crew through one side of the refinery. Incidentally, only one unit is damaged out of 30. So the refinery can run now, 85% can run right now. So the one unit is down, and we always run with units down. That's where the maintenance comes in. But they're processing the crew through the one side, the Point Breeze side, and I guess when that runs out, we'll be down.
What would happen if this is a huge refinery? What happens if it shuts down?
Well, we had an analysis done in 2017 done by the University of Texas, and they equated for the loss of every 100 refinery jobs, the output to the regional economy will be $1 billion. So we're talking $10 to $20 billion going into the coffers of ultimately the state and city. That's the effect there. And also for every one refinery job that's lost, another 18 people will lose part or all of their salary. So it's a big economic engine down there for the regional economy.
And then what about on the refining, the refining aspect? The product that goes through there will not go through there anymore.
No, there's no way to make up for the whole of the loss of a 335,000 barrel a day refiner, a major supplier of gasoline, home heating oil, and diesel. Now, people I've read in the paper said, we'll be supplied from the Gulf Coast. There's one pipeline coming our way, Colonial Pipeline. It runs at its max all the time. It was built in the 60s, so it's been running at its maximum rate. So we'll have to be supplied from Europe, and we'll be at the whim of their price spikes and attic transportation costs coming across the sea. So yeah, you know, this ventures into a national security issue. In the winter, a lot of home heating oil for the entire Northeast comes out of that refinery. So it's going to get cold. I mean, hopefully that analysis is wrong, but I don't see it being wrong.
Well, you're talking about a lot of product. So yep. That's going to have an impact somehow.
No doubt about it.
I know, Terrence, you're an operator. How long have you been there?
I've been here 13 years.
What if your job disappears? What are you going to do?
Well, I still have kids in school. I'm not looking to uproot them. I mean, the company's had in different companies come in for like job fairs. Most of them are for out of state. Some are for out of the country. I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that to my children. So I'll have to find something likely won't pay as much, but you still have your bills, responsibilities, tuitions, so on and so forth. And you have to try to make it work.
How old are your kids?
I have one that just turned 19 and one that's 15.
Okay. What do these jobs pay on average? I'm not asking you for your specific salary, but on average, what do these jobs pay?
You'll make about $100,000. With overtime, you'll get more. You'll make more. So they're significant, good paying jobs that, you know, if the refinery closes, won't exist anymore.
Where are these people going to go if the refinery closes?
I have no idea. Like Terrence said, there's refining companies from around the country and over the seas that are looking for experienced operators. So they may have to go there. So it's going to, affect the direct employees of PES, but also, a lot more people. You know, an estimated about 30,000 people will lose part or all of their salary if the refinery closes.
And it sounds like, I mean, these are very specific jobs. Very specific training. So it's not easy. It doesn't sound like it would be easy to transition into another kind of industry.
No, not to. Well, basically, like I said, you do a 3-year apprenticeship program when you come in. When I was hired, you actually, once you completed that, you were state certified. So you could go anywhere with that certification, but there has to be a need. I mean, if the need is Louisiana, Texas, Saudi Arabia, not a whole lot of people are, you know, clamoring to go to these locations. And especially with the situation, if you go by the numbers, we have the highest safety rating of any of them. Why would we want to go somewhere where we could be put in danger? I mean, if we're busting our behinds to make sure it's as safe as possible and we're close to friends and family, that's the ideal way that you want things to be.
But now you might have the challenge of trying to find a job making the kind of money you make, which is if you have a lifestyle, you have bills, like you said, and those jobs are hard to come by.
Yeah, absolutely. Pays a good buck. And the job of a refinery operator, you have to be in a refinery to do that job and make that kind of money. So, yeah, it's uncertain times for us.
Yeah. What are you hearing from your membership about that? Are people willing to go wherever they need to go, or more people like Terrence who just want to kind of stay here?
It's all over the place right now. Everyone's holding out hope that a buyer will come in and we start up, because 85% of the refinery can run right now.
And if it closes down, you said job fairs, what can the union do? What will the union do to help them?
Well, right now the company's having the job fairs on site because there's people still working. It's a 24/7. So we'll do that at the union hall and reach out to our other locals around the country to see if we can get people placed, but you'll have to move.
Mm-hmm. We've just been talking about kind of what your job prospects and, you know, the fact that you might lose your job, that's got to be very anxiety provoking for you. What are your thoughts about that and your thoughts about moving forward?
Well, I guess with me, I mean, my thing is always for my kids. My oldest son already asked, do I need to start contributing to bills. He's, you know, have a little job, but, you know, it's, I'm telling you, focus on school, you know, use your job to, you know, get the little things you need. He's asking me, do I need to pay bills? My youngest son, as soon as he turned 16 in a couple months, you know, was hassling me to go get his work permit so that he could pay for his own, you know, clothes for school or his fees for AAU basketball and what have you, because he doesn't want to have to ask me because he doesn't know whether or not I'll need the money for bills or for the house or whatever the case might be.
Sounds like you've raised some pretty good kids.
I tried. But kids shouldn't have to worry about that.
And that's the thing. The anxiety is just not yours, particularly when you have kids old enough to understand what's going on and what the consequences could be.
Right. I mean, you try to raise them to be smart with their money, be intelligent, you teach them, but that doesn't eliminate the fear factor. I mean, if your kids care about you even half of the way that you care about them, they're going to be concerned about what's going to happen with you.
What does that do to you to have your teenagers asking you how they can contribute to the family, how they can contribute to bills as a dad? What's that like to hear?
Well, I guess the first thing you feel, it's, I guess, a sense of pride because they actually care. I mean, a lot of kids are, I guess, deemed ambivalent or self-centered and what have you, but they cared. But it is stressful because regardless of whether it's a mentality, whether it's a macho thing or what have you, you still have that, you know, I'm the provider, I'm your dad, I take care of you. You don't worry about taking care of me. And for them to feel that they might have to, so it's disheartening.
It really is. I mean, that was my one of my first thoughts when you were describing that is a little bit of a role reversal. You know, the parent, yes, it's your responsibility to take care of your kids. When you have them turning that around, it's got to be tough.
Yeah. I mean, I try to, you know, make the joke with them, you know, I'm not in the wheelchair. I'm not ready for the retirement home yet. You know, we can revisit that time, but, you want to put them at ease, not let them see you stressing or worried about anything. But it's challenging.
Then how do you deal with the stress? Because if you don't want your kids to see it, but it's there. So how are you coping?
Me, I'm riding shotgun with Ryan here, trying to see if we can't garner the support that we need and I believe deserve to get this thing back up and running again. There is, like Ryan said, there's no reason for the refinery not to be running right now.
Ryan, what about you? What's your family situation and how are you dealing with it? Do you have kids?
My kids are grown. I have a 27-year-old, a 22-year-old, and a 19-year-old. So, I'm focused on trying to get our message out. Knocking on every door I can and pulling in the membership to do the same. The home front, my family's nervous, the uncertainty, but we'll survive, no doubt about it.
Would you leave the city for another job?
My wife's asked me repeatedly that she'd be willing to go, but I can't see, you know, being uprooted. I haven't even pondered, you know, I haven't even put a resume out yet. So I'll wait till the nail's in the coffin to start looking.
All right. Thanks for coming in, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
That's all for the KYW Weekly Dive. I'm Carol McKenzie. I'll talk to you next time.